G'day expats, welcome to another episode of Expat Chat, episode 19. You're joined here today, same again, with my colleague Brett Evans, Managing Director for the Europe, Middle East and Africa Division of Atlas Wealth, and myself, James Ridley, Managing Director for the APAC Division. How are you going, Brett?
Well, thanks, mate. Yourself?
Yeah, good. I mean, obviously, I can't really complain at the moment. I'm lucky enough to be in Queensland. Queensland seems to be doing everything correctly given the pandemic. So we've had some freedoms given back to us in the last few weeks, which is nice. But as you've probably all been aware and watching sort of maybe closely back what's happening in Victoria, just seems like now, you know, the daily increases are at record highs in Australia, just in one state. So whether that's a case, this might be a bit of a second wave beginning or the start of one back in Australia. I have to wait and see, but I think we could honestly see some restrictions put back in, you know, another stage two or three. How about yourself over there in the Middle East? How's Abu Dhabi or Dubai, I should say, going?
And I've actually got to say I've enjoyed all the Victorian memes going around the social media pages about refugee boats going from Victoria to Indonesia and all that sort of stuff. So it's been a good, you know, interesting watch over here. I mean, it's sort of funny where I think from a UAE point of view, our cases are low as far as what we're concerned. But you know, we're in the 300s on a daily basis, but no deaths. I think the medical fraternity has really got a handle in terms of patient treatment, in terms of from recovery point of view and how that works. But I think also, and my wife and I were talking about this, you know, last night, I think it's a matter of how to get on with your life in a post-COVID world. So sensibilities and those sort of things. And I think people are just doing it. You know, it's something that, the idea or the premise behind having no new cases on a daily basis is probably would be a shock than an expectation. And it's a matter of, okay, how do we get on with living our life in a safe and healthy way, but not staying locked indoors until there's zero new cases, because otherwise you'll be indoors for a very long time. And I think from a psychology point of view, from a mental health point of view, people are social creatures and they need to get out and start to live.
Yeah, I think you make a very good point there about the mental health side. I've talked to a lot of clients and, a lot of the things that they mention is about, you know, sort of developing these anxiety and stress sort of disorders accidentally because, you know, they're at home, they're working from home, they're exercising from home. It's like they're cooped up and they can't switch off, you know. They look over to the left and there's their work desk and their workstation and going, you know, shit, I'm going to return to that in 6 hours, you know. so a lot of those types of scenarios have started to develop. But I think, like you said before, I don't think we're going to see a world where COVID's gone. I think it's a case where we're always going to have these flare-ups. It's just sort of understanding that this is the norm until one of those, I suppose, readily available vaccines becomes evident. I don't think that's for another 12 months maybe.
I think the vaccines, you hit the nail on the head. Until we have a certifiable vaccine that is, you know, widely adopted, that, you know, it's the panacea for what we're going through, this is the new norm. This is what we're going through. I mean, you know, it is concerning to look at the US. You know, when you see 16,000 new cases in one day in Florida, you know, just the numbers are nuts. And yet they're opening Disneyland, Florida Disney. So, whether they're pushing forward to try, you know, like we said before, to sort of try and cope with the new world of COVID or what, but one thing I know for sure is that, the world still turns on a daily basis. The sun still rises in the east and sets in the west. And, you know, can we or can't we sort of put off, you know, living? I don't think we can. I think we just need to learn how to work in the new world.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, one thing that's quite unusual is just looking at that John Hopkins sort of heat map you sent me out a long time ago with the daily count. I was looking at the daily US count, I think, yesterday. It was about 67,000. It's funny when you look at these graphs and you compare them to the indexes, you know, NASDAQ, S&P 500.
It's even though the case, positive correlation,
Yeah, which doesn't make sense. And we've said this before, and I think we've both said before, more of a W-shaped recovery rather than, I suppose, this V or this U or this odd V, where it's a long sort of tail end. Yep. It's going to take a while, but, yeah, it's unusual.
Well, the new phraseology I've been using, you know, this week with clients is the WW. So we could actually be in this seesaw action.
Yeah.
And look, it depends. Actually, before we go any further, we need to do the disclaimer so then we can you know, sort of free ourselves from compliance liabilities. All information that you have the pleasure of partaking and listening and watching is for informational and general purposes only, and you should not consider this as personal financial advice.
Not at all.
No. So what I was about to say before is, you know, I think last numbers I saw, was it about $1 billion a week Australian that, for every,
yeah,
for the, as long as this goes on, it costs the Australian economy. So there's going to be wax and waning of demand. You know, off earlier before, you know, new government stimulus packages coming out from a training point of view. You know, look, I think like you and I have been banging on every week about we're still in the embryonic stages of a pandemic. And when you really boil it down, we're still learning. And as more data comes out, obviously Q4 coming out of the US, so Q4 out of the US and Q2 out of Australia, or 30 June, sorry, other way around, Q4 out of Australia, 30 June results coming out of Australia and Q2 results coming out of the US, we got to get a better read on what's going on. And to me, it's the certainty exists when we have a bit of a roadmap in terms of from a chronology point of view. And right now, I don't think we have that ability to roadmap out the next 12 months. Certainly we can draw on different things. And it's amazing where in the US markets are reacting to the prospect of a vaccine, the prospect of this, but they're just blatantly ignoring, you know, the hard data of, you know, 16,000 new cases in Florida on a daily basis. So to me, it's until we get that sort of removal of expectation and come back to sentiment and come back to reality and match it up. The reality doesn't have to be bad, but it does need to reflect the market. And yes, you will have this tug of war effect because there's so much money coming in from a stimulus point of view. Numbers I saw the other day, there's been an 18% increase in US dollars in the world in the last 2 months. So we really can say how many US dollars are floating around. 18% is a pretty big jump. But you know, that demand, it's risk on, risk off. And it's that risk on approach right now. People are happy to take the risk on, but we all know they can run for the gates. And it's when you do start to get, you know, I don't know, just things are catching up. And I'm just looking at, you know, we obviously watch the markets on an hourly and daily basis. And I'm looking at right now, it is, you know, range bound between sort of 5,800 and 6,000. It keeps popping its head above that 6,000 mark, but it can't sustain it. And to me, a market is almost like a living entity in that it does have its own personality. And when it can't sustain a breakthrough, it gets exhausted, you know, and it pulls back, it pulls back. And a market should be able to build upon sentiment and facts and hard data. And when you don't have that, you know, that build up, you know, things start to run out of puff. And that's where I think the market will always embrace as much as it can. But at the end of the day, it gets exhausted and goes, you know what, okay, yep, time for a bit of negativity. Bang, 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 like we saw back in March.
Pull back a bit.
Back a bit. And then to me, that's got to be the moment where our fingers will be on the triggers, because we're now buying with the benefit of hindsight. We're buying with the benefit of factual knowledge of how it's affecting the tills and how it's affecting all these different scenarios. And then we can price it in. You know, if you look at the numbers, the market on average is expecting earnings per share to fall across the board on the Australian market by 25%. Yet the market is down 15.
Yeah.
So that's to me, you know, and yes, if earnings will improve by 10% over the 12 months, then it should be down 15%. The biggest concern I have is you need companies and CEOs and directors to provide guidance when they deliver their 30 June results. If they don't provide guidance, then the market is going to be concerned by that. And I can't see the vast majority of companies providing guidance. It's going to be easy for Coles, Woolworths, those sort of companies to do it because they've got real-time information combined with they're doing okay. But when it comes to, say, like a cochlear, you know, hearing implants, they don't know when hospitals are going to start doing elective surgeries. So what guidance do they give? And that to me is where it's going to really sort of rumble the market is, there's going to be a flock to companies that give guidance and then maybe an exodus from companies that can't provide guidance. And that, to me, is going to create that consternation in the market, and that's going to create that volatility.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, once we start to see a lot of the Q4 data coming out, you could see a lot of people maybe reposition their portfolios to take on thematic type positions. Consumer staples, they've performed really, really well through this whole COVID period. You know, you look at obviously Coles, Woolworths, outstanding. You know, they've actually increased their revenue because of all this hoarding. So you'll notice, yeah, there'll be a bit of a trend there developing. But I mean, what's also going to be interesting is, you know, September, you know, there's these mentioning of this fiscal cliff we're heading for because of the rollback of the stimulus packages, the rollback of the JobKeeper, JobSeeker, small business initiatives, those sort of things. Realistically, I mean, Victoria, let's say it is a second wave and we go into lockdown stages once more because it, you know, naturally just spreads. There's that pub as well where a lot of truckies go through that pub, and I honestly think that will just probably, you know, be like a bit of a spider pattern or whatever, and it'll just head on out because they don't really get checked. And they have access to go over the borders. You know, is it highly likely that they'll keep the stimulus package just rolling over maybe till the end of the calendar year then? You know,
yeah.
How's that going to look?
And that's more cost. And then you've got the scenario right now where, you know, there was talk this week that banks are increasing their bad debt provisions. You know, the longer this goes on, especially with businesses, it's going to affect the banks. Obviously, one of the reasons why we're underweight banks right now is that's one of the many reasons why. you know, we're not holding market weight. You know, market weight's 38.5%. It's almost half your portfolio if you market weight. You know, we're sitting at 15%, and sometimes I even think that we're holding too much bank, you know, too many banks. You know, so to me, there is still that uncertainty, you know, whether it's on the loan side, you know, provisioning, is it enough? You know, let's say, for example, there's no extensions granted. You know, the moratorium for rental eviction stops, the loan repayment holidays stop. You know, that first month's going to be interesting because the banks are going to know very quickly who can now re-engage and start repaying their mortgages and who can't. You know, and that to me, quarter four is going to be, especially for the property sector, a very eye-watering event.
Yeah, absolutely. Quarter four? Yeah, okay.
So, once we hit October and through December, you know, that's when we'll see, you know, and negative equity could be a consideration for a lot of Australians for the first time.
I think it will be, to be honest. I mean, given that they might have to keep this stimulus package going, what that looks like for a deficit point of view, a lot of small business owners will probably have to sell properties, those sort of things. You know, we've said before, property market usually takes a bit longer to feel really the effects of these kind of things. Pandemics, maybe another 12 to 18 months, and then, you know, the cycle will restart again once the vaccine has come out. You know, one item that we wanted to talk about today, you know, with this whole pandemic is it has forced a lot of expats to repatriate. It has forced a lot of them to change their work plans and come home, and, you know, they're in unusual positions where they have these offshore assets. And how does that look? What are the considerations around repatriation? What do we do with these offshore assets? And how's it going to be impacted from an ATO point of view if we're forced home? Personally, I've got a few clients that they've returned back to Australia. They're still treated as non-residents. They're working from home in Australia because the ATO has been lucky enough to give some guidance, and they've sought relevant tax advice as well, which is good. But, you know, that's some of the major considerations, isn't it, Brett, when we accumulate offshore assets and then repatriate, and how these assets are going to be treated?
Look, I think in a you know, a non-COVID environment, a repatriation is quite a structured affair. It's, you know, done over 3 to 6 to 9 to 12 months sometimes. And you can plan, and you can start to move assets. You can start to, you know, reshape your finances to suit tax residency. Where COVID has really sent, pardon the French, shit sideways, is the fact that people are being retrenched almost immediately, and because more often than not their work visa or their residency visa in a country, especially like the UAE, is linked to that work. When they get retrenched, they have to leave.
Same
in
Singapore.
They can't just suddenly, you know, go, I'm just going to cool my heels for the next 6 months and see what happens.
Yeah,
they're like, you must, you know, leave.
1 month. 1 month, you're out.
Exactly. Yeah, I think, you know, we're working with a lot of Emirates crew, EK crew, and virtually from, I think from memory, it's 27 days. From the day that you are made redundant, you have 27 days to leave the country. Now, the issue we're dealing with a lot of, not only just Emirates crew, but, you know, expats in the UAE in general, is, for those who've been here for an extended period of time, they've accumulated local property, the local accounts. There's a lot of, you know, sort of housekeeping to be done. And you know, when you consider the ATO's purview overseas, gone are the days of being able to leave this stuff here with, you know, out of sight, out of mind. Now it becomes in the clutches of reporting, and people have to make decisions, and it's not a good time to sell property, you know, because obviously we're going through a pandemic. So forced sales, they're not realizing true value of assets. You know, with Emirates Crew, probably the hardest thing is, you know, that they have a provident fund. And, you know, we have a strategy we use for EK Crew during normal times in terms of when that redemption should occur and so forth. And just to explain to the readers, you know, there has been private rulings and correspondence received by the from the ATO, how they view the Emirates plan. They don't view it as a foreign pension, you know, which is unfortunate. Yep. They view it as an investment trust. And the reason they classify it as such is because they say you can use that money for whatever you want. You can go and buy a boat tomorrow. It doesn't have to be used for retirement purposes only, because there's no preservation age. There is no retirement, you know, sort of companionship. Yeah, criteria.
Yeah.
So therefore, if you are to sell down that EK Provident Fund in the tax year that you return back to Australia, then that Provident Fund is fully taxable. And for the basic, for the virtue of the fact that you're crystallising a gain in the same financial year that you became a tax resident, therefore anything in that financial year gets scooped up and picked up. Now, you know, fortunately we're able to, you know, work with a number of people pre 30 June, you know, crystallising those gains, selling those gains down the cash before that step over into 1 July to demarcate it. But there will be a lot of, and not just Emirates Crew, but I'm sure there's provident funds around the world that expats would be feeling this. You know, they have this, the expat has a view that it's a pension fund, but actually it's not, it's just an investment trust. And it can create a lot of complicating factors, because normally what we'd like to do is crystallise all the gains in one financial year and then repatriate in the next financial year. So straddle that 30 June, 1 July sort of timeframe. But unfortunately, you know, they're calling it the golden email going out. You know, when you get this email, bang, you don't have a lot of control as to when you return to Australia. It's like you are going.
Yeah, exactly right. And I mean, you know, a lot of people obviously are being forced in those positions where, okay, shit, we're in a new financial year. They get that golden email. They've got this provident fund. Their options are pretty limited now. You know, they can put in a cash, but it's a new financial year here in Australia. So if they return in that exact same financial year, it's highly likely that transaction that they realise is going to be taxable, you know. So, I mean, we talk about different assets, and I kind of wanted to go through a bit of a list just quickly. You know, if we're holding offshore assets, let's look at cash as a different currency. You know, if we repatriate back to Australia and we're still holding this foreign currency, well, technically speaking, that foreign currency, you know, the cost base for that currency should actually start when we repatriate. So if there's a, you know, US dollar, great example. You know, we're holding US dollars. You look at what happened to the Australian dollar, 58 cents.
Yep.
If that person returned at a similar time, you know, they've made a really easy currency gain there, but usually that would be taxable as well over that period if they've been, you know, a normal Australian tax resident.
That's right. The ATO, you know, sort of gives you a window to get your house in order when repatriating back to Australia. But if you go through that window, then they say, right, you're now acting not from a sense of practicality. You're actually investing by deferring, transferring assets to try and get a better currency. So if you're trying to transfer US dollars and you're waiting for the dollar to fall from 70 cents down to 55, then yes, you'll get more money in Australian dollars when you receive that. But you're more than likely to pay capital gains tax because you're not doing it out of sense of timing. You're doing it out of sense of financial decisions.
Yeah, you're trying to benefit from your own sort of situation because you've got those offshore assets. It's the same with direct shares. You know, a lot of clients that obviously are in the US, they're lucky enough to get a lot of these, you know, good shares dumped on them. And then when they repatriate back to Australia, it's very common that they'll have these share portfolios, you know, and they've got to decide, well, what do we do? Well, if you're already back in Australia, you've resumed being a normal Australian tax resident, you know, if you sell down those shares offshore, they are going to be taxable if there's a capital gain over that short period that you've been back in Australia. That is something that does need to be declared. And as Brett mentioned before, it's becoming very hard to hide these kind of transactions from the ATO due to FATCA, Common Reporting Standards, and all the tax information exchange agreements that are in place now as well. Probably the hardest one, I think you mentioned before then, was property.
Yep.
Property is a tough one, especially if, you know, like I said, if you own property in Dubai, you come back to Australia. If you're trying to sell it, how's the ATO going to treat that? It's, you know, it's usually a case where we can lean on that sort of main residence exemption. But if we're moving back into our property that we own when we get back to Australia, that will become a bit of a grey area.
I mean, which one's your main residence? Yeah,
that's right. That's right. And I mean, as we've mentioned before, the main residence exemption has been abolished, only obviously for non-residents, for expats. But when you're back as a normal Australian tax resident, funnily enough, you can still lean on that on an overseas property if you've got investment properties and those sort of things.
Exactly.
Outside of, you mentioned before, Brett, about, you know, the Provident Fund, sort of the Emirates case there. In terms of sort of foreign pensions, there aren't many where the ATO actually ignored them as an overseas fund.
There's one.
One, yeah.
There's one, UK.
Yeah.
And the reason being is it's designed as a pension. It's designed to fund retirement, and there's a preservation, you know, component in that you can't get access to UK pension until 55. So when the Australian regulators are looking at comparing apples with apples, they want to see something that's similar, not the same, yep, because it's impossible, but similar to the way that super structured. So in the US, you know, yes, they have 401ks, but you can get that early if you want to.
Mm.
And in the UK, they classify that, in the US, they classify that as social security. So it's different. Whereas UK, it's classified as a pension. It has preservation. It has all the same bells and whistles in a different wrapper to the super scam. And that's why pretty much UK pensions are the only way, they'll actually, bring that up. So.
All right, I just had a big old sneeze and I had to whack up the mute button.
No, it
blew out my eyes. So you're right. The 401k, it's very unique how, you know, there's all these different, obviously, offshore retirement vehicles. 401ks, you know, they're tax deferred vehicles. When we draw down on them, that's when we'll pay our marginal US tax rate, obviously, to the IRS first, and then we'll get a bit of a foreign tax credit there on the Australian side. The drawback is, yes, our marginal tax rates in Australia are higher than the US's federal ones, so we usually have to pay a bit more depending on the income level. The UK, again, that scheme's pretty good. You know, we can actually move it into an Australian super fund, but now with all the changes back in 2017, it's very difficult to do so with these QROPs, the Qualifying Recognised Overseas Pension schemes. I think we've still got the non-concessional contribution caps we need to abide by, so only up to 300,000. It's honestly a bit of a nightmare to do so, and it's very costly because you have to have a UK financial planner on top of it, a UK tax accountant, an Australian accountant, and then
set up an SMSF, and then you have to go through, and the trust deed on the SMSF is not a standard trust deed. It has to be a very specific trust deed to comply with HMRC, and then when you've done that, then you have to register it with HMRC to get it recognised. But then some UK pensions don't allow partial drawdowns. That's either all or nothing. And that will blow your contribution cap. So then you might have to move your UK pension to what's called a SIP, which is the UK version of a SMSF. Like it's
SMSF.
It is like tapping your head, rubbing your stomach, hopping on one leg and chewing gum at the same time. It's you know, there's a lot of moving parts.
Yeah, it was a good quote that. I'm not sure where you pulled that from. That might be just a token Brett Evans
quote. Yeah, no, I think it's a Brettism, as my wife calls them. Yeah, she calls them Brettisms.
Yeah, well, I mean, as you put it before, when it comes to sort of repatriation advice, structuring, review, you know, ideally you start planning well before, you know, 6 to 12 months. You know, you're coming back in Australia in the 2022 financial year. What have we got? What do we start, or what do we need to start maybe liquidating or winding down in the background so we can sort of get that cash or that capital back in Australia? And then ideally we're arriving in a new financial year, so there's a clear demarcation between the financial years that you've been non-resident and a financial year that you've been a normal Australian tax resident. That way it's all squeaky clean. Very easy for the ATO to acknowledge that as well. So there's no, I suppose, confusion.
It is. And look, I think what makes it more difficult is normally the ATO allows you 6 months to repatriate any foreign pensions. There's only one UK. But if you're 40 years old, then you can't repatriate that in 6 months. You'll have to wait 15 years before you can touch it. So that UK pension then becomes suddenly accessible on your Australian tax side on any growth that it experiences post your repatriation back to Australia and your classification as a non-resident.
Yeah. I mean, and we haven't really even got into sort of overseas pensions. So when you talk about overseas pension, like as an example, if you're a green card holder, or an American citizen, you're paid into Social Security for 10 years. You're going to get a benefit there when you're 67, 65, or 62. Sorry, guys, can't actually recall. I think it depends on the calculator you use.
Yep.
UK similar, depending on your tax status there. And the same with a lot of, I suppose, European insurance sort of policies that they have, which is what they call over their insurance. That's their pension equivalents, and we can access those. But a lot of the time, the ATO does have a lot of bilateral agreements around tax treatment. So usually a case, as an example, for a US citizen residing in Australia, we'll get taxed on our US Social Security pension, but that means that it will be tax exempt in Australia. It's laid out clearly in the bilateral agreement, which is good, but it usually means we'll be paying non-resident alien tax on the Social Security on the US side. So that does take place, but that's just another layer of confusion with obviously all these offshore assets that we can accumulate.
And then you have, you know, a lot of countries in Europe have private and public pensions. So, you know, from that point of view, you'll have scenarios where, you know, in Switzerland, you know, your private pension is transferable. So you can abide by that 6-month rule if it is deemed as a pension, which more on offer it's not. But the public side, which is a proper pension, is not transferable, and you might get $5 a month, you know, because you can't draw down on it because you've only been in that country for 4 or 5 years. So it is going to complicate everyone's financial affairs more, but certainly understanding it and learning more about it is the most important part.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, given the whole pandemic situation, unfortunately, it's caused a lot of sort of issues with expats that have had to return quite quickly, and then it's going to cause a lot of probably tax issues in the 2020 financial year just gone. And I mean, obviously, one of the big ones there is that main residence exemption. I was speaking to a gentleman earlier today, and they had a contract of sale, and they went through it. They had 3 different buyers, and all the buyers fell over, and now he can't sell his property.
You
wouldn't believe it. And it is. And he, you know, he's asked for his options. I said, well, there aren't any at the moment because, you know, it's
turned to Australia.
That's right. I said, you can either keep it rented, keep it going, and you know, just make sure you're servicing it, and then obviously sell it when you come home. Even asked whether he could go about applying for a private ruling from the ATO. And I said, well, very unlikely, because if they give you that benefit, what's to say they can't give every other Australian expat around the world? That's exactly right. And we haven't really heard any news whether anything's going to take place there. I doubt it.
Look, I doubt it. And, you know, I had a call this morning with a client, and as I said to them, you know, to me, the biggest issue you've got dealing with where we are right now is, you know, the Australian government's going to have the largest amount of fiscal debt they've ever had in their lives. So I think tax reform is on the cards, and there's going to be no conciliatory affairs between raising revenue and taxes. It's going to get worse before it gets better. You know, the authorities have to have to put in place something to help them pay down that debt. And, you know, if you're putting your hand up to get relief from tax, I think you've got a very slim to none chance of getting it done.
Yeah, that's right. And it was, you know, doing a private ruling on a sort of main residency exemption situation, it's just not going to happen. Like I said, it opens up the floodgates, and right now they need to raise revenue given the whole situation, the amount of money they're pumping into the economy.
Exactly. And I think going forward, we're going to see more changes. You know, I'm not sure what sort of changes they can make going forward, but it's certainly going to be an interesting landscape to watch over the next 1 or 2 years. We'll probably get a bit of an insight in the October budget, but it's going to be watch this case, I think.
Do you think that the October budget will still go ahead if there's a second wave back in Australia?
They have to. Yeah. They have to provide some sort of roadmap in terms of how they're going to govern going forward. And, you know, that governance is going to be paramount in terms of engaging the market, engaging stakeholders, engaging everyone else, and what they're going to do. You know, so I think they've by October they would have had a long enough time to understand the moving parts of COVID with the economy, and you know, whereas when their budget normally is, which is in May, it was still in its embryonic phases.
Yeah, I think you're right, actually. I mean, by October, in the event there is a second wave globally and it ramps back up, at least, you know, they've seen what they've done in the past with all the sort of stimulus packages. They've seen what works, seen what doesn't work. And it's already sort of laid out a bit of a template that if this gets worse again and flares back up with no vaccine available, well, they can re-implement it. Yes, it's going to throw us obviously further into a deficit. But, you know, what else can you do? You need to keep the liquidity alive.
Yeah, no, exactly right. Exactly right. So, mate, I think it's probably a good place to leave it. If we could just go on for an hour and a day, and sort of running down these rabbit holes. Look, in a quick summary, repatriation strategies for Australia. People need to be aware before, during and after of what the ramifications are. So certainly reach out to anyone who is match fit in dealing with these issues because, you might need a provision for some extra bills that you'd never thought you'd have to pay. So don't rush back to Australia and spend every cracker you've got because, there could be implications when you do your tax return next year.
Yeah, that's right. Absolutely. Now that we're in a new financial year, but good place to wrap it up, Brett.
Mate, it is. So you look after yourself. Keep the light spinning back in Oz. We'll keep the same over here in the sandpit and talk to you on the next episode.
No worries, Brett. Appreciate your time. Speak soon.
Cheers, mate. Thanks, mate.
Cheers. Thanks, mate. Bye.